How's it, everyone? This is Nate. I get to welcome you to the podcast and tell you about our sponsor for today, which is Oakley Standard Issue. Oakley Standard Issue is a division of Oakley specifically for serving those that serve government, military, law enforcement, firefighters, and EMS, the whole lot. Qualified members are going to get exclusive access to new products, service-related discounts, that's the big one, but a whole lot more. Products they're probably already known for is the eyewear. Their eyewear is ballistic rated and industrial certified, perfect for on the job. Footwear that meets uniform regulations while on duty, which is kind of a big deal. Some of my favorite boots I've ever had are the Oakley boots that I picked up when I was in Fort Bliss doing a ton of ruck marches there. Other accessories like gloves and backpacks. Some of my favorite gloves I've ever had have also been Oakley gloves. Newly released off-duty styles and collections are definitely stuff that you want to head over and check out. Head on over to oakleysi.com to register. Then you can take advantage of our discount code, which is fieldcraft15 at checkout to receive an additional 15% off of your first order. Again, that is oakleysi.com. Built to protect. Make sure you head on over and check that out.
Hey guys, welcome to the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast. I'm going to be your host for this episode. I'm here with my good buddy, Jerry Young. I am not going to answer my phone for the next hour. It's been ringing like crazy. A bunch of folks from Utah want us to do all sorts of stuff. I'd rather just sit here in the podcast room. I'm playing with an M9 bayonet that was sent from Ontario Knife today. So just, it's nice to have inspiration in front of you. And we're talking about training today. So I don't know. If you hear me like fiddling with like the bayonet clip or anything like that, that's just me playing with an M9 bayonet. What the hell? Why not? How you doing, Jerry?
Good, sir. How are you?
Today's been one of those crazy days. Absolutely nuts so far. Planning photos for the second book. Planning out our shotgun class that we're going to do in the fall. Actually, no, we're doing it in the summer. So we got one in the summer, one in September, one in December here. We're just doing all sorts of stuff. So today's just been nuts. And the nuttiness isn't going anywhere. So how about you? What's going on today?
Oh, busy as always. Workouts, feeding the ducks.
Yeah, and you just did the Murph the other day because we are on the tail end at the time of recording this of Memorial Day. And you said that the Murph kicked your ass.
It did. Yeah. Lack of preparation on my part, though.
And you did it with full plates. And what was your time?
49, just almost 50, but just short of 50.
Not bad, man. I didn't do it. I slept all day because it was a crazy, crazy weekend of training. I was out. I did 8 shots of espresso from Lynette's Bakery. So big shout out to Lynette's Bakery and the gals over there and to Ray over there. They kept me going. So I didn't do anything this weekend. I felt like a lazy piece of garbage, but I'm okay with that. But the purpose of this podcast, we want to talk about lessons learned, some of the takeaways from training this weekend. And you and I were just sitting down for some burgers and some BS. And we were like, hey, let's come up with a list of some of the takeaways from the course I taught, which was the 2-day survival, civilian survival school. And you did 2 days of personal security, women only. And then also you did the co-ed.
Yes, sir.
All right. So where do you want to start off?
You want to go back and forth, or are we going to do a complete list?
No, I think we need to go back and forth. First off, I think you're really getting into your groove with personal security. Like, I remember asking you, I was like, how do you feel about it? And you're like, I don't know, there's a lot to cover. But after getting some good role players and doing it back to back, I mean, I don't know how many times you taught it so far, but you definitely seem like you're in a comfort zone now.
Yes, I'm definitely more comfortable with the program for sure.
So what do you got for your list?
All right. Well, since you just mentioned role players, that's one of the things I have on my list. Like, we had a phenomenal role player, and it actually made the scenarios. Having a good role player that could feed off the students and not push them too hard, but pushed them when they needed to be pushed. And he was a great shit talker.
Important.
Which is very important. Yeah. But he didn't, like, continue with it. Like, outside of the scenario, 100%. Respectful and professional, whether it was the co-ed or the women, he was spot on. So shout out to Peyton.
Yeah, that was my first time meeting him. And the funniest thing about him is that he's got that dirty, like, porn star stash. The first thing I noticed when I looked at the group photo, I was like, dude, if he was the role player, I'd want to shoot him for just being that obnoxious with that stash. And I think that's what you guys were saying jokingly, right?
Like, yes.
He said, you will want to shoot me because of this mustache. Yeah, he seemed like he was super quick. He was tough as nails. I mean, he got shot I don't know how many times. And like you said, he took it from the course to the students, but then he turned it off when it came time for the after action. And he wasn't, you know, the jerk the whole time. Yep. So well, that's awesome. And for those of you wondering what personal security is, it's a scenario based course. You're probably going to go through this type of timeline when you get your pistol permit or your firearms license. You're going to take an NRA safety class. Safety class is not a training class in terms of drawing from the holster, learning how to shoot strings of fire. A safety class is a safety class. Then there's marksmanship. But something that a lot of people miss when it comes to firearms training is that they do the safety class and then they go right to carrying the gun, and they don't have any repetitions of drawing from the holster or repetitions of learning to deal with malfunctions. And then there are a lot of people who will go through that training, but then never do force on force training or scenario training. So personal security, the class that Jerry's talking about, is where you get to use like a Glock 17 Tango and shoot at a guy who may or may not pose a threat. And we offer them here at Fieldcraft. And it sounds like there's going to be a part two very soon, right?
Oh, we're hoping to develop it. But for those who don't know, the 17 Tango, we're not actually shooting 17 Tango. T is for trainer. And they're shooting simunition rounds out of them, or the new force on force rounds that we discovered are a little bit hotter than the other ones. So we're not actually shooting the role player with a real firearm. We're shooting with some munitions.
Right. Right. Spot on. Which, those new rounds, mother of God, we shot these rounds. Like, we have the simunition brand and then we have the force on force brand, and Jerry and I and John were in the warehouse. We're like, ah, let's just see if they function in these new pistols. So we loaded up a few, and we're used to the sound of it indoors. But when we shot the force on force, it was like, whoa, that thing ejected the round fast. And I mean, they're impressive. They're very, very impressive. All right. So one of my takeaways, you guys were indoors for a lot of it. We were outdoors and it was wet, a constant drizzle. And I've heard people say, oh, if it's not raining, we're not training. Well, we were saying that that is something that people like saying to themselves to kind of psych themselves up for the training. It was really, really wet. But the good thing is we had a parachute shelter, and it kind of mitigated the humidity and the dampness. Like, we lit a fire underneath it. And there's an expression, there's no bad weather, there's just bad rain gear. All the guys had pretty good rain gear. We stayed under the shelter when it was really coming down, and then we left the shelter to do shelter building and, you know, looking for different things in the field. When the rain subsided. Yeah. You can tell I didn't get enough sleep last night. So that's just an important lesson. Like, there's no such thing as bad weather, just bad rain gear. If you have cotton pants on, you're walking through the grass, they're going to get wet. If you have just the poncho and not rain pants, you're going to get wet. And all of our gear reeked of campfire, because that combination of like wet cloth and smoke, like, I think it just makes the stench of campfire that much worse. So that was my lesson. No bad weather, just bad rain gear. What do you have for your next one?
All right. So the next one is, and I'm sure it's not the correct term for it, but we had a sympathetic response during a scenario. So like I said, I'm not sure exactly what the correct medical terminology is for the neurological thing, but what the guy did is the role player was at his door, and it was a vehicle scenario, and he had his pistol drawn and inadvertently had his finger on the trigger. And when he reached to secure the door, as the guy was trying to pull the door open, when he applied pressure with his other strong hand, it actually caused him, and he sympathetically squeezed his strong hand and discharged the firearm into the inside of his elbow inside the vehicle.
Damn. So he had so it was bad trigger finger discipline, right? And it was also bad muzzle management.
Correct.
You know, and they say, like, you can, in theory, if you want to go home at night, you can break one, but you can't break both.
Right. Yeah,
I mean, if he had bad trigger finger discipline, but that gun was pointed at, say, like the roof of the vehicle, well, guess what? His vehicle gets shot, minimal collateral damage, but no personal injury. Or if he had great muzzle management, but terrible, or I'm sorry, if he had great trigger finger discipline, but terrible muzzle management, he's still not shooting himself.
Right. But keeping that muzzle pointed in a safe direction, because if you mess up and you do any of the other things wrong, if the muzzle's pointed in a safe direction, you're more than likely going to be okay, but you still need to follow all the rules anyways.
Yeah. All right. So here's one for mine. I don't think you guys had to deal with any spiders, right?
We did not. Just the chickens.
Holy crap. You know, it's the South, and out West, out in Utah, when I was teaching the classes out there, I saw one black spider and I was using the Seek app on my phone. And I'm like, okay, what is a spider that is just crawling by where I set up my camp? And it said, oh, widow family. But I never checked to see if it was a black widow. One of the students here was taking down his tent and he's like, oh, look at this. It's got a red abdomen. I'm like, don't touch that thing. So we went over there and the guy, actually Rob from ExoTac, Rob was like, hey, you know, let me take this stick and I'll turn it over. And, you know, the black widow, it was there. He turns it over and sure enough, it's laying on its back and you can see this perfect red hourglass. I'm like, mother of God. So we saw that weekend alone, black widow. We saw wolf spiders, spotted dot wolf spiders, which are pretty awesome predators, wolf spiders in general. We saw a flat jumping spider. The spiders are everywhere. And you've got an experience when you did the Madison Parker class, right? Like you were taking a piss at night and...
Yeah, I turned my headlamp on and it looked like there was glitter all over the ground. And I'm like, oh, what's that? I got closer and it was just tens of thousands of spiders all over the ground.
Yeah, there's a reason why I like sleeping in a hammock in the jungle or in the South. I don't want to give creepy crawlies the wiggles. You know, if you guys take a class, you'll learn the five W's that we talk about with shelter building. I don't want any of those wiggles waking up next to me. So that was a lesson. It was like, okay, you're in their backyard. Make sure that you keep your pant legs tied down or tucked in. Make sure that you're spraying yourself. Like, you got to be careful of the insects. What's your next one?
All right. So next we have... So we had quite a few malfunctions with the, actually what ended up being squib loads. The rounds were getting stuck in the barrel and we thought it was user error. And then like one, like I knew it was sounding differently, but I couldn't get the gun away fast enough at the end of the scenario. And the first round was actually protruding out the end of the barrel. So we couldn't clear it there. So I had to take all the guns home that night and clean them. And I actually had to put the gun in a vise and take a metal rod and pound them through with a hammer. But there was six rounds built up in the barrel of that gun. So as I'm trying to clean them out, what I found out is that the rifling in the barrel is actually shaving off the plastic that surrounds the soap or wax that the ammunition's made out of. And it's just like, it just builds up in there. And then the plastic just kind of bonds to itself because it's hot. And then, so what we did the second day is I brought a boar snake, and then like in between shooting, you know, like after every couple mags, we would just drop the boar snake down and snake the boar out. But even that, you could see like all the plastic curlies coming out of the barrel. So I don't know, maybe we're doing something wrong or what it is, but that was the solution we came up with. Because it was started just with one gun, then it was another gun and another gun, another gun. So
yeah. And we talked about like potentially, like really scouring those barrels to the point where we're opening up the diameter just a little bit. But then you were mentioning like, yeah, accuracy is going to go way down. And I mean, granted, they're not shooting 25 yard shots with them. We still want students to understand that they can be accurate. And I mean, well, we'll get to the headshots later on. Yeah. It's easy to take a headshot when the guy's right on top of you. So another lesson that we had from the survival side of the house, the bow drill. Brian Edwards came out. He's Wilderness Woodcraft on Instagram. Brian is a legit bushcrafter, someone who just took up the skill set a few years back. And I mean, he, on his days off, which he's retired, so every day is a day off, he's carving spoons, he's doing bow drill fires, he's making cordage. One of the things we do during the Civilian Survival School is we want the students to understand the bow drill. Well, it's wet weather. Now, the bow drill is all about making sure that you have like very little moisture in the wood, very high ash temperature. And anytime that you have moisture in the air, well, that moisture in the wood is going to, or I should say the dryness of the wood is going to soak up the moisture. And then all the ash that you're forming is going to act like a sponge. And it sometimes creates these like little cakes of powder. Well, Brian Edwards brought out the material. He did a partner assist with each of the students. Every student got a bow drill fire. And one of the lessons that we tell the students is like, look, this is with prepared materials here in the worst weather. And it takes a long time to run the bow drill. It requires two hands. It requires optimal conditions, and then you're still going to need good tinder. Well, it's so much better to just carry a ferro rod and a lighter. And that was impressed upon the students. They're like, damn, like, it, number one, it's really awesome, because every student said that they've only heard about it. They've never actually done it. And when they got that first fire, they're like, I understand Tom Hanks. Right. And I mean, you did the bow drill years ago for the first time with me.
It definitely taught me that I'm going to carry a lighter and other ways to start a fire, because.
And I don't think since you did that was like mid 2000s. You probably have never gone a single day without carrying a lighter, right?
No, yeah, all the time.
Yeah, I know. And people would be like, but Jerry, you don't smoke. And they just don't understand until they get their ass kicked from a piece of wood. What's your next one?
All right. So next we're going to have.
By the way, I'm sorry that I printed that out like for like the Derek Zoolander kids that can't read good, like that small. I should have printed that out larger.
My old man eyes. All right. So it was neat as an instructor to see like the way stuff used to be trained and how it is now. But his old school training also, though, we'll just call him Gunny, because he was a retired gunnery sergeant from the Marine Corps, and he was involved in convoys, I believe, over in the Middle East. So we had a two-person scenario, and rather than him getting tied up with what was going on the driver's side, he actually paid attention to his area of responsibility, and he was able to get his gun out and shot the second role player before the role player got to have his gun up and he had his gun in hand.
Now, you were saying like old school because he was an old Marine, and I mean, tactics change.
Right. So that wasn't like, that was great with it, what he did, but the tactics has changed. So when we did some quick room clearing to let them have some fun and shoot a little bit, he was going up and staying tight to the wall and then just doing the like sneak peek around the corner and engaging the targets. And then when we got all done, I just explained to him, like, I know that that's the way you were taught, but try doing it this way. And I show him, you know, stepping away from the wall in the doorway and slicing the pie. And when I did it, he was just like, wow. He goes, that's amazing. He goes, but that was the way I was trained before. He goes, but you know, I'm not going to do that now. I'm going to do it this way.
You know, what's pretty wild is like during World War II, guys were clearing homes in Europe with M1 Garands, like a fucking rifle that was 3.5 feet long or 4 feet long and had eight rounds.
And weighed like 12 pounds or something.
Yeah, and it was 30 caliber. Like, talk about over-penetration, you know? But we were talking about this the other night, like with revolvers. You know, when people think revolver versus autoloader or bottom feeder, as revolver guys would call them, you know, we were saying that, you know, most people bring up capacity or double action trigger versus single action trigger, but even the concept of like workspace, where to load a revolver, you have to tip the revolver down. An autoloader, you can load upside down, you can load any which way, but the revolver you need to lower your eyes, and you can't keep your eyes up, so to speak. I mean, maybe you can, you know, if you bring your hands way up high, but it's just so much more natural with an autoloader.
Yeah, because you were just so used to having that coming up and the barrel's pointed up, the muzzle's pointed up and slapping that mag in and going. But if you were trying to do that with a revolver, you could, even if you had a speed loader, you're going to hit them in there and they're going to fall out of the cylinder before you drop it back down.
Yeah. Good lesson learned. Another one, parachute shelter. You know, guys brought a 5x7 or a 6x8 tarp or a 10x10 tarp. One of the guys that was in the class, Alex, he and his dad, Doug, two really cool dudes. Alex showed up and he had his his tarp ridgeline squared away the way that I posted on the old Fieldcraft training site. And it was with the mini prusik loops and the mini carabiners. But a lot of these guys that brought small tarps are like, man, there's a big difference between what you sleep in versus what you live in. And that giant surplus, it was a backup parachute. So Brian Edwards goes over and he looks at like the nomenclature written on the sil nylon. He's like, oh yeah, this is some dude's reserve parachute. That was all we needed for, there were seven of us and we had a fire going in the middle. So I would rather live underneath a parachute shelter and have a small sleeping space than have just one tarp that kind of does both, but that's not always an option. But when we look at what we carry into the great outdoors, if you have a family, I mean, everyone might have these small tarps, but having one large one really makes a difference when it comes to like boosting morale, BSing around the fire at night. Like at one point, John Welk brought out a bunch of elk that some buddy of his, you know, gave him, and we cooked the elk right on the fire. And, you know, we always talk about breaking bread together. Well, we broke bannock together. We had shared hardship, shared food, and shared fire. And it was like such a great group. So Parachute Shelter, guys, if you're looking for a great inexpensive way of getting out of the rain and keeping people together, get one. It goes up pretty easily, and it's got a whole bunch of runners that already have 550 cord on them. So pretty easy to set up, and it'll become home as long as you're in the woods. What's your next one?
Next one is the issues or problems of having a one size fits all training aid. So we had in the women's only class, we had a couple females who had really small hands. Actually, one girl's hands were so small, if she grabbed the pistol the way I was telling her, her trigger finger literally did not reach the trigger. Mm-hmm. And then so that led to some malfunctions. So we were kind of talking about maybe going to, like, I think SIG makes a airsoft gun that's on like the 365 side, just so they could have something more controllable to use and fit their hand a little better than a full-size Glock 17.
You know, it's interesting. Like, you think back to like the 90s and the 80s when they developed like the 10 millimeter Colt Delta Elite. They're like, oh, this is going to be the solution to not being able to shoot through glass. And then they're like, oh, no. Will, we have agents that can't hold on to this gun. So we're going to make the 40, which if you shoot a 40, dear God, please join us in the 21st century and get yourself a 9 with some good ammo. The 40 is just a super overpowered round and it blows up more guns than anything else. You know, there are people that shoot a large frame pistol really, really well. Lena Mikulik, right? She's going to be at her, I don't know when this podcast is coming out compared to hers, but Lena and I talked. If you watch Lena shoot a SIG 320, I mean, she reaches her support hand, her other strong hand, around the front of the gun, and she's holding on to the trigger guard with her support hand. I mean, she shoots it super well, but I mean, she's also a pro shooter. She can shoot whatever gun she wants. Big guns are easier to shoot. Little guns definitely recoil more. What was the solution to that?
We just let her modify her grip so she could do, but she also wasn't having good accurate fire when we were shooting at targets. And the other girl that had it was, she just didn't have the grip strength, mm-hmm. and she was having trouble manipulating the weapon, just bringing the slide lock to load it and stuff like that. So,
yeah, maybe it's a gear issue. If you guys know of any firearms manufacturers that make smaller simmunitions based pistols, we're talking blue guns here, guns that are color blue that only shoot Sims rounds, let me know. Just DM me or message me. One of my lessons learned here, signaling limitations. And I'm curious with you, like with your background as a cop, we had overcast. So visual communications, we're not using signal mirrors. At night, we used ferro rods, and I showed the guys just how bright a ferro rod can be at night, and they're like, oh my God, I can't see. Audible, don't yell, use a whistle. But electronic. Electronic cuts through, like if it's a satellite-based one, it works really well. But when you were a cop, how many times did you experience radio failure?
Oh, all the time.
So people will say, like, oh, I'm just going to make a cell phone call, or I'm going to use a radio. But like, what were some of the things that you found caused that?
Well, prior to switching over to the 800 megahertz, it was, you know, if you went in a building, mm-hmm. most of the time you were done. It just wasn't going to, you know, get through the walls to get out. Really heavy weather sometimes would do it. Thunderstorms would mess with the communications. It all depends on where the towers were and stuff. And then they put in like other towers for like repeaters. And sometimes we would, all right, we're going to switch from this tower to mm-hmm. this tower because the signal's not good. So, you know, and then people wouldn't switch back, which was dangerous also, because it'd be like they're talking on one frequency asking for help and they're on the wrong frequency. So,
yeah, man. So when you did come across people, like, because I know you got called out a bunch of times and you had to find people, like if there was a car accident and they said, hey, I wrecked over here. How are they flagging you down? Was it quite literally like flagging you down, like waving hands? Because, I mean,
sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, other times it was more a visual thing where you'd be searching for a car or a vehicle and you'd just get the reflection of off the license plate or a taillight or something that would just, you know, and the car goes off the road and it's, you know, 100 yards off the road and you're looking for it. You don't know where it left the road. And then just the lights were.
Remember the way that Marty talked about creating a signal out of an old tent pole and a flag. Mm-hmm. That's one of those lessons that people are blown away by. They're like, oh my God, this thing works great. So basically you just get an old tent pole, keep it in your vehicle and have an old bright, either like construction yellow or blaze orange piece of cloth that you can cut into a flag and put on the end of the flagpole. But if your vehicle is off the road and in a ditch and out of line of sight where Jerry or another cop couldn't see you, then you raise the flagpole up and that improves the visibility. Or maybe like Marty talks about how like a car got buried in a snowstorm and a guy raised the flag and the snowplow driver drove by and saw the flag sticking up out of what looked like just like a white field of snow. And he went over and investigated it, and there's a dude trapped in his car. Like, that's a great lesson. So understand signaling limitations. That's the lesson learned from the survival side of the house this weekend. And guys realized, okay, you can't just use a mirror. You can't just use a whistle. You got to carry a few different things, and electronics don't always work.
You can't use smoke either because, yeah, I mean, if you have a smoke generator going and it's as moist as it was this weekend, that smoke's going to just lay right on the ground. It's not going to rise up.
Yeah, and the other thing is the color of the atmosphere was white, and all the smoke that they were making was white. So Brian Edwards was like, yeah, how can you get black smoke? And you can use birch bark because it has oil in it, but then there was a freaking tire in the woods, and Brian's like, you burn that thing and watch the black smoke come up against a white background. So you got a contrast. Give me another one. What do you got?
Oh, judging a book by its cover.
Yeah, okay. So if you guys get a chance, take a look. I mean, if you come down here to Fieldcraft, North Carolina, you're going to see our student photo wall. We've been building this thing up for like a month or so. It's already taken over one wall. We're going to expand. And if you guys have, you know, photos from classes, send them to me. If you have a bunch of police patches, send me a police patch. I'll put it up on the wall. But we've got all of our student photos up there. And if there's someone who can't be photographed, we'll blur their face. Like if we have LEOs that are undercover. But I looked at your student photo. Which one are you talking about?
So I don't want to offend her and say older lady. So she was about my age, but you know, she was there with her daughter and she was, you know, soft spoken and not really, not like strutting around or anything like that. And she ended up being like a phenomenal shooter right out of the thing, like no trouble handling the gun. And then we went through a couple scenarios and she's like, well, I would kind of like to ramp it up a little bit. We kind of like looked at each other and I'm like, what do you mean? Well, what I would do if somebody grabbed me from behind. So I gave the role players the go ahead and we put her in a scenario, and the one role player like grabbed her in a bear hug from behind and she literally kicked the shit out of him, drew her gun and was like shooting over her shoulder and shooting him. Like, John was a role player, Gray Farm, and he had bruises on her shin, but it was just like, you know, that's what she wanted. And I just wouldn't have pictured that much fight in her, but she just like set right off. And
so the bear hug was to her back and yep. Her arms are free, right?
No, her arms are trapped in. She managed to get her gun out and sneak up as she was kicking. She created distance and allowed him to loosen. And I mean, John's a climber, so he's got like, and the he said grip. He had a super grip on her, and she managed to get her gun out somehow and reach up and around and shot him, I think, in the head and chest and shoulder.
You know, one of my guests that's been on the podcast before, I'll tell you his name afterwards. I don't want to call him out. Law enforcement guy from New York. He was involved in a grappling incident. And this is before he took up BJJ. And he said that he was on the verge of going out and he pulled his gun, shot the guy and killed the guy. People don't realize it. Like if you are getting choked out, you're going out with a proper blood choke in 8 seconds, 8 freaking seconds. You may not have time to recognize I'm being choked. I need to access my pistol. I need to work through the problem getting to my pistol. I need to present my pistol. Like, how much time does it take to process all that if you haven't been training? You know what I mean? Don't judge a book by the cover. Yeah. When your wife took the personal security class and I bear hugged her and I ran out the store with her, there is someone in the store who ran after me and she basically did a contact shot between the blower suit. Like I was like, mother of God, like, and she just kept going, but you can't assume that people are going to take it easy or negotiate. That's the other thing. Like, oh, we'll probably talk about it before we fight. Like, like she just went right to guns and shot me. Don't judge a book by its cover. And you said that the women were very aggressive, right? More so than the men this time.
Everyone I've taught, the women have been more aggressive. I mean, the guys just kind of knock the role players around a little bit, but like the women, like just go, they're vicious.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Especially when you get the mama bear coming out in them where you throw a child into the scenario, they like really amp it right up.
Yeah. I know the role players are really good at utilizing the kids as leverage, right? To get the moms all jacked up. And it's very simple to say something like, after I knock you out, I'm doing what I want with your kid. And like, what do you do if you hear that for real? Like, holy crap. Like, what will they do? Your mind runs wild. Imagination runs wild. And you're like, Jesus, I got to take this guy out. Another lesson learned on my side, expanded rules of three. Now you followed me to 5.11, or you drove with me to 5.11 a couple weeks ago or last week in Charlotte. And we did the ABR series, the Always Be Ready series. We had 25 people in the room. So thanks to 5.11, Danica Dutt, thanks for setting that up. And at that seminar, I talked about the expanded rules of three, because most people think like rule of three is 3 minutes without oxygenated blood, 3 hours exposed to the elements without good clothing, 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food. But there are so many other rules of three when we stop and we write them down. Force, timing, and space is fight math, which that makes it so easy to look at all the personal security things and say, hey, where's the force? Where's the timing? Where's the space? And then cordage, length, strength, flexibility, another rule of three. You need to have all three of those. Another one is shelter, right? Inside, over, and under, another rule of threes. So we just kept going and going and going this weekend with all the rules of threes. And the guys were like, damn, that rule of three shows up over and over and over. And I said, yeah, and it's a concept, you know, like the PSYOC readiness formula is awareness, preparedness, and willingness. So there's no doubt about it that when you think of the rule of three, most people think time, but the rule of three exists in other domains. And you know, even with your pace planning, right? Primary, alternate, contingency, you should have three good methods of doing something so you avoid the emergency method. Like it just, we just sat around the fire. I mean, none of us this weekend were ripping bong hits or anything like that, but we had a moment where we were talking like, there's another one, you know? And it was like, we had this, like this powwow.
Well, we got the triad of death in the medical thing.
Oh, gee, yeah.
Coagulation,
yep.
Hypothermia, and acidosis.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you want to take one of those three away, but the fire triangle.
Yeah. Fire, heat, fuel, and air. It just kept going and going and going. So it was cool to kind of direct the guys to look for additional rules of three, and they just kept popping up. Give me another one.
So the next one I had was, one of the students asked a question like, why don't you just want to shoot somebody in the leg or arm, which you get a lot as cops. And she had a why behind her question. She goes, well, I don't want to kill somebody. And it just ended up working out. The scenario we got into, the guy got her all flustered and he snuck up on her and she ended up shooting him right in the head. So as we're debriefing, I'm like giving her a little bit of a hard time, but kind of open her eyes. I'm like, why didn't you shoot him in the arm or leg? And she said, I didn't have time to think about it. And I'm like, exactly. That's why we're talking about this. And she just, it was like, she got that aha, like, oh, now I see. I'm like, yeah, you didn't want to kill him, but you also didn't want to die yourself.
You know, that cracks me up when people are like, I'm just going to shoot him in the arm or in the leg, or I'm going to carry a knife, but it's going to be a non-lethal tool. And I'm like, so where are you planning on cutting someone? Stabbing, thrusting, slashing? Oh, in the arms and in the legs. And I'm like, okay, so no one has ever bled out from getting cut in the arm. No one has ever bled out from an accidental puncture to the femoral artery. Like a 22 can kill you. A Swiss Army knife, pen knife in the right place will kill you. So let's just change up that idea. Oh, I'll just shoot him in the leg. Are you that good of a shot where you're going to miss anything that could kill someone?
Like, well, and most of the time they're missing, including law enforcement. Yeah. I mean, except for people who are stay on top of their skill. I mean, they're missing the whole body, let alone, and they're aiming for center mass, let alone doing select fire to arm or a leg to wound them.
Right. Yeah.
We just reiterated, like, you're not shooting to kill them. You're shooting to stop the threat.
Yeah. Hopefully those guys learned that. And it sounds like they did.
They did.
So this one's actually a fun one, because recently I put up a survival school poll on Instagram and I said, hey, which of the Fieldcraft survival staff would you like to see at a 2-day survival school? And for a while it was going back and forth between Mikey Hernandez and Amber. So, Amber ultimately won. So, Amber, if you're listening, Buttercup, you got to come on out. Remember, eyes up, Buttercup. So I'm going to say, survival up, Buttercup. You're welcome anytime. Just let me know when you want to run the class and let's get some of your gals out here too. But Mikey, you came in a very, very close second place. I would actually like to have both Mikey and Amber out here for a 2-day survival class in the woods and show them, you know, what we do on this side of the country. And the reason I'm bringing up Mikey and not just Amber is because Mikey, when he camps, he cooks some really good food. He's got the, it's not the Scottle. Maybe it is a Scottle. He's got a, no, iCamper Disco. He's got an iCamper Disco, which is basically like a wok. And when Mikey goes camping, like he's got an ultimate setup. He's got a great, you know, Jeep Gladiator with a rooftop tent and he makes pancakes and like, you know, Mikey knows how to cook. So selfishly, I wanted Mikey to win because I was knowing that he was going to come out here with good food. But one of the things that we did on this 2-day survival class is we tested a lot of backcountry food. I'm going with my buddies this August to Colorado. We're going to do a backpack fishing and backpack mushroom hunting trip. So I was like, I need to test certain foods that I'm going to bring. So I found these like Asian noodles that John Park would definitely approve of. I added canned chicken, which I'll change for the foil packet, but then I added the hot sauce to it. And oh my gosh, it was one of the best backcountry meals. Scott Gossman, who makes my Polaris knife, used to work with a guy at Giant food stores. And Scott was like, dude, I could tell every single time that that guy had ramen because his farts started smelling like ramen. But I think it's important to test out backcountry food in a somewhat controlled setting. And that's what we did this weekend. And I am very happy that that backcountry ramen came out great. But you do a lot of backcountry cooking. What's your go-to? Because I know you like the Zatarain's.
Oh, I love Zatarain's rice, but yeah. I would have to say Idahoan potatoes, foil pack chicken, and try to make some kind of gravy to go on it and just mix it all up.
So wait. So inside the Idahoan potato package, or do you have to dump it out?
No, you just take the you boil a cup of water, dump the instant Idahoan in there, stir it up, and it's hot because the water's boiling anyways. Put the foil pack chicken in there and then just eat away.
Yeah. I gotta play around with that a little bit more. I've been doing the whole keto thing lately, trying to definitely getting fat with all the travel I'm doing with Fieldcraft. By the way, if you guys fell for my April Fool's joke where I said that, I've got a dad bod, you know, 2022 was tough on me. That was actually, not me. That was Seth Rogen. And a lot of people fell for that. And then when I said, hey, that's not me, I lost, I don't know how many followers. I think it was like 50 something followers. They were pissed off that I got them. So just remember that next year, I already have my plan for what I'm going to do next year. And you guys are going to effing hate me. What do you got? You got just a couple more, right?
Yeah. So, I got four more, five more.
Okay.
At the end of each class, we went over and did like a debrief and, you know, I asked them what they liked, they didn't like, they wanted to change anything and, like what their aha moments was, but like across the board, a lot of them were saying like they, when we did the 21 foot rule, we did how fast someone can cover distance. So we do it first starting with where the guy runs away from them. They draw and fire at a target. And then they look, turn around to look to see how far the role player got from them. So our role player Peyton was like lightning as it was. So we're like, dude, you got to slow down a little bit. Cause like, he's like running out of sight before they're getting the shot off. And then we would have them run the role player run at them. So they got a little bit of stress on them, but a lot of people were just like, they were just amazed on how fast, like they'd all heard about it, but they just didn't comprehend how fast and how far someone can cover if they want to.
Yeah, that fight math that we were talking about earlier, that force, timing, and space, basically with timing, Peyton, as the role player, gets to call go before you do. And it takes a certain amount of time to respond to Peyton's initial running, certain amount of time to get that pistol out, certain amount of time to present it, certain amount of time to get a good sight picture and squeeze the trigger or press the trigger. And Peyton, I mean, super athletic kid. John was telling me that he was doing backflips in the blower suit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could barely get up off the ground when I got the blower suit on. So,
right. And if anyone's like, oh, you know, the average person out there can't do that. I mean, I know you've talked about like some of the meth heads that you had to deal with in the police force. Like they do superhuman things when they're all drugged up. What was the most memorable thing that you remember someone doing where you're like, that's Superman?
He jumped through a plate glass window at the first responding officer bare naked in the middle of winter and was obviously bleeding profusely. And we had to fight with him and tase him numerous times to get him under control so that we could save his life because he had a femoral bleed.
What drug was he on?
We never found out. He said shrooms, but I think it was a little more than shrooms. I guess it could have been a bad trip, but he was, he's lucky to be alive.
I want to say it was, Chris Oslins who told me a story of, he was chasing a guy, and Chris is like 6'6". And Chris was chasing a guy that was on drugs, and the guy jumped on top of like a concrete wall on like a freeway. And Chris said that the wall was taller than him. So imagine like a 7 or 8 foot high wall. And Chris said this guy on drugs jumped and basically did the I Am Legend zombie thing up the building. Like, and Chris was like, there's no way I'm catching this guy. I don't even know if Chris eventually caught him or not, but drugs make people superhuman.
We did have another guy that we get a fire alarm activation. The fire department gets there and they call for the police because they have a man out of control. So this dude was way high on meth running around. He actually like was smashing windows. He took the, it was an old folks home. He took the fire hose out of the thing in the wall and was spraying, screaming at us that the Terminator was after him. He like picked a couch up and threw it at the first two officers.
Jesus Christ. Oh my God. Guys, don't do drugs. All right. This is my last one I've got. We did a boil water challenge. So everyone was like, hey, we want to build fire. We want to build fire. The focus for the students this time around was we want to know how to build fires. We want to know how to tie knots. And we tied a whole bunch of knots this weekend. But after day one, like we spent a lot of time on fire and knife use on day one, we get them really familiar with their tools. Not one person cut themselves this time, so there's no first blood award. But we said, all right, you guys have to bring water to a boil in 20 minutes. And they, we said, you cannot use... you can't use the already dry wood that we had set aside for the fire from the night before. You got to do it off the land. And a lot of them struggled. They got fire going. It took time. One guy got it going right away because in his handle of his ExoTac ferro rod, he had a piece of tinder. I was like, that's fair game. Guess what? You had it on you. Good to go. But then they got the fire going, but they couldn't bring the water to a boil because they couldn't get the fire going hot enough. So then I said, all right, let's do an after action. What would you guys rather have? And they all said, man-made tinder. One guy grabbed the bike inner tube that I brought out for them to cut up and put around their Bic lighters. He's like, I just grabbed that whole freaking thing of bike inner tube, which was like a 12 inch long piece. And he's like, it got my fire going right away. I'm like, you know what? Good for you. So then they're like, well, there's no dry wood. There's no dry wood. And I stopped them and I was like, hey guys, see that tree over there? And one of the guys looks over the tree. I'm like, okay, watch this. And I reach over and I start flaking away some of the pine bark. And he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, it's a lot lighter than the wet version on the other side of the tree. And I'm like, usually you can find one spot of the tree based on like the curve of the tree that's dry. So I was like, put this in the fire, and his fire went rip roaring. So the water went to a rolling boil very quickly.
Why didn't they go to my go-to favorite?
Which
that
one?
Place is lousy with fat wood.
You can just
break sticks off and get the flat wood out of it.
Yeah. So they eventually did. One guy found a couple stumps that were broken. But there's no doubt about it that after I showed them the bark trick, they were like, we're used to finding wood that looks a certain way. Either it's dead and down branches or it's, you know, squaw wood, you know, it's hanging from the branches or the trunk of the tree. But when they saw the bark, they're like, never thought of bark. I'm like, well, most people think birch bark or they think cedar. But a lot of these barks are, well, I mean, let's face it, it's wood and it's going to burn. And when they did that, they're like, Jesus, that was a great lesson. And then they also realized the importance of a wide bottomed cooking pot as opposed to a tall bottle, because the wide bottom was able to direct all the heat straight up. The bottle, you had to build the fire around. So that was a good lesson for them. And they realized the importance of, yeah, we can do it the hard way, but if you carry a pocket rocket with a small stove with a small fuel canister, now you have the ability to make a fire in 5 minutes, no problem whatsoever, any condition really. And that was like kind of the theme throughout the weekend. Like, we can show you how to make cordage off the land, and they did, but then it's easier to carry cordage. We can show you how to do a bow drill, it's easier to carry a lighter. We can show you how to build a fire and bring water to a boil in an emergency, or just turn on your stove. Like, if nothing else, the 2-day survival class, the civilian survival school, is to show you what to do if your gear breaks and you have to spend 72 hours in the backcountry. But that was a great lesson where these guys were like, man, I didn't realize all these things until I made these mistakes, and I had to correct them. I'm like, guys, there's no such thing as a mistake right now. You're learning. You know, you're either going to be successful or you're going to learn. And that's a concept too. Like, stop running away from, I hate the word failure. Stop running away from not being successful. You're going to learn. So go out and train hard. What do you got? What do you got for the last few?
Well, actually, there's another one that was attached to the aha moments. And
yeah,
that was like the decision point, which is kind of like, think what the course started at with Mike Glover and Kevin Owens was a decision point. And people were like so amazed, even though I showed them on the board, you know, this is the whole scenario, and this is where you have to make that decision. They just couldn't believe on how fast they had to make that decision and how fast a threat could present itself.
Yeah, and you said that, and I think it was either you or John or Peyton, there was a decision that had to be made at an ATM. And there's a guy who walks into, it's one of those ATMs where it's like a vestibule of a bank. You run your card, you go inside. So the guy's getting cash out, and there's a guy that comes in the door while he's getting cash out. Now, what do you do, right? Like, do you say, hey man, I'm almost done. Hey man, I'm afraid of COVID. Like, but you, someone said that the guy already pulled the gun and was like ready to shoot the guy. And he's like, I just want to get my money out. And the role player was like, fuck you. You're going to shoot me? Like, I just want to get money out. Like, in that moment, if that guy didn't actually pose a threat, now you as the person holding the firearm, you're brandishing a weapon.
You just became the instigator at that point.
Yeah. So it's a fine dance or a balance. Like, when do you pull your gun? If you pull it too soon, you're the person that's probably going to get arrested. If you pull it too late, you're going to the grave. Yeah. So, damn. Was there anything else like that? Like, where someone either pre-staged it too soon or, you know... Do you remember any of the scenarios? Like, without giving anything away.
There was a couple where they drew the gun a little too early and like acted too fast when there was other options they had to take care of the situation. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to give too much away with that one, but that's a hard one.
But you know what the cool thing is? Like I just gave away like 10 lessons learned from the survival class. These were the first 10 that came to mind. Like, I could think of probably easily 25 to 30 more lessons learned, individual lessons, group lessons. I mean, I didn't even get into building the natural shelter. I didn't get into, signaling with certain materials. Like, there are so many takeaways. Like, if you guys are learning from this podcast, just imagine what it's like in person, you know? And I think with your class, especially with the personal security, there are so many little things where people are like, I don't like my holster here. I like it this way. Like, it's discovery learning, you know, discovery by doing. But you got a few others on there.
Yeah. Huh? So it was let's see. So we had one good question come up about the legal ramifications where you have a concealed carry permit, but you go to an establishment or a location that has a sign that says no firearms or weapons permitted. And they were asking me what I would do, and that's a personal choice. I mean, I can't. There's the legal answer is you have to obey that, or you could lose your pistol permit and be arrested and charged with it. Or if something bad happens in there and you happen to break the law, then you know you save your life. But that's all a personal thing. But you know, the legal thing is you have to obey the law, but it's that moral decision. We used to say like a tough guy thing, like cops, like, oh, I'll take a bullet for you. Well, that's not the question. The question is not who you'll take a bullet for. It's who you're willing to go to jail the rest of your life for.
Yeah. You know, there's that expression too. It's better be tried by 12 than carried by 6, right?
Correct.
You know, another thing that comes up with that is not just the establishment, but people always say, well, I'm traveling across country and I've got to go through states where, you know, technically I have to stop at the last exit before I, you know, enter the state where I can't carry something. And of course, we're going to tell you, follow the law, but we're also going to tell you there are individuals out there that say, I am not unholstering. I would rather drive right at the speed limit. And you know what? That's a decision you guys have to make. At the end of the day, what are you willing to live with? And you just need to think, you know, second and third order effects. Let's say that you don't unholster. You get pulled over and now you lose all of your guns for the rest of your life. Or let's say that you don't unholster, something happens and you save your family. You lose all your guns for the rest of your life, but your family's still here. So it's a decision you have to make. And there's what is it like the 50 state guide to firearms laws? It comes out every single year.
You can get it like on the USCCA and a lot of them other websites that say,
Yeah.
Lists all the kind of like the kniferights.org.
Yeah.
Just lists, you know, what you can and can't do, and if you're going to travel there, what you're supposed to do. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, and guys, don't come to Fieldcraft Survival for legal advice. We're not lawyers. You want to don't trust your legal advice to like some free website. You know, you want to actually, if you really care about, hey, can I do this or can I do that? Talk to a lawyer, actually talk to a lawyer who's a friend of yours, or you pay for them. And also realize that it's always case by case. So no lawyer is going to say always or never, you know what I mean? They're going to say, well,
it depends.
It depends, right?
Totality of the circumstances.
That's right.
What a reasonable person would believe.
What else you got? Anything else?
I think the other big thing was that when we did the, at the end, we did the debrief.
Mm-hmm.
Across the board, everybody wanted a level two. They wanted more training. A couple people said they wished that level one was actually a two-day class.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's hard to manipulate it because, you know, everybody can't do that. But we may start working on a level two and try it out and see how it goes.
Yeah, and the tricky thing too is like you want to open up the numbers and get more people there, but not everyone is going to run through the scenario. And if you watch a scenario and then you run it, you kind of lose the beauty of that class because it's about the unknown, you know, and you can game it. And that's one of the issues with competition is, you know, you see what the stage is and you kind of game it. There's no such thing as gaming in real life because the moving parts are always going to be different.
Yeah, and we didn't run one scenario twice. So even the students that were watching it go down were learning, and we allowed them to do like a peer review. I asked them if they wanted to do that. And then they, you know, so the other students were kind of reviewing, you know, they were just checking on each other, and no one was like vicious or malicious about anything. It was all like honest stuff. So they really learned a lot from that stuff. They enjoyed it.
Yeah. And the students were asking me for advanced training. I'm like, look, I got an advanced survival experience course coming up in South Carolina in October. I said, you guys spent one night in the great outdoors. Imagine spending two nights in a primitive shelter. Imagine having to catch your food. By the way, there will be black snakes that are going to be in play, and there's going to be a whole bunch of insects. Like, you want to get your ass handed to in a survival experience? Like, we're going to do that in South Carolina. So a bunch of those guys were like, yes, let's do it. I'm looking forward to that course. I know you're looking forward to setting up the 2 day. I know you're also looking forward to Aaron Snyder coming here.
Yes. I'm not all the way done with that podcast, but I was reading, you know, listening to it, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be good.
Yeah. So we've got some cool training coming up here out of the North Carolina Fire Base. Aaron Snyder, who's a good friend of mine from Kafaru, which, by the way, Jerry is the one who introduced me to Kafaru back in 06.
Tail gunner.
He goes, yeah, you need a tail gunner. And I was like, damn, I already have a Mountain Smith day pack. He goes, no. Kafaru is run by Patrick Smith, who owns Mountain Smith, but this is a military line. I'm like, son of a bitch. And the next, you know, I buy a Whoopi, and next, you know, I've got a Zulu pack, which went to my buddy, Mike Cole. And now I've got like all these Kafaru things. And
I'm such a Kafaru nerd. I actually found the binder where I went through and printed out all of Patrick Smith's like blog things and articles he wrote. And I have a note, I have a three ring binder full of them where I printed them out.
Yeah.
It's in there, like his possible pouch. And
that's a good article, the possibles pouch one. Aaron is doing a lot of videos. He's doing a lot of Kafaru casts that are just theme based ones. Like, what do you do when you have injuries in the backcountry? And he just talks about the injuries. It's not like he's in having a bunch of guests, but he's just inviting people on to talk about themes. So I kind of want to do that with Jerry moving forward. So Aaron's coming out in November. He's going to do a 3 day backcountry hunting seminar. It's $1,000, which find a course with a guest instructor for $1,000 where you're going to get probably close to 25 hours of training. He's going to do archery, survival. We're going to do land navigation. We're going to do a little bit of everything. Jerry has offered to let Aaron Snyder sleep in his house. Aaron's got these crazy big dogs, so he'll be right at home with Jerry's three dogs if Aaron wants to. Otherwise, we'll put him up in a hotel. But that class is going to be limited numbers of seats, so you guys will get a lot of time with him and with me, with Jerry, and whoever else from our company comes out to help out. So if you guys are having bad luck hunting, learn from Aaron. If you want to do better hunting, learn from Aaron. If you want to hear some great Aaron Snyderisms, like, you know, fucked up like a football bat, and, you know, if it was raining pussy, he'd be hit in the head with a dick, then please come out and train with Aaron, because the dude's so much fun. What other classes do we have coming up that you're looking forward to?
We're going to be dropping new shotgun classes.
Yes, we are.
And not new. We're going to be dropping other shotgun classes, so that's going to be fun.
Yeah, and we both have an A300 patrol and a 1301 tactical that we are going to make sing. And if students want to feed them, I have no problem saying, go ahead, try to outshoot this gun. So if you guys want to screw around with some semi-autos and you're only working with pumps, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. And you might end up being a couple thousand dollars broker afterwards because you're going to want both. What else do we have?
Jason Smith. Jason Smith's coming up.
Yep, Hobo Forge. Guys, Jason Smith was on the show Alone the Beast. He runs Hobo Forge. He makes a Sear Puko, and he makes the Hobo Hatchet, which Brian Edwards just got that instructor knife, which looks like Ed Arnold's. And dude, I just sold a bunch of knives. I don't want to buy more, but I want one of those knives.
It's got a nice look to it. And Ed uses that knife. I think he's had it with him ever since he got the thing.
Yeah, and he's always posting pictures of it. Guys, go check out Allegheny Frontier.
Al Nodenson's coming with the bow.
That's right.
So I had a thing this morning as I was going for my 20-minute recovery walk.
Yeah.
I'm going to get one of his bows, and that's what I'm going to hunt with this fall.
Oh, yeah. And if we hunt on that property in South Carolina, you'll have an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He carries some pretty sick broadheads, too. I'll have to show you some pictures of them. So that's awesome. You're going to get that, what is it, the assassin bow?
I don't know. I'm going to tell him, this is what I want to do with it. Give it to me.
Cool. Well, guys, listen, there are so many lessons that you can take away from training. You know, Jerry and I were just, again, having way too much fun talking about the weekend. I was in the woods Saturday, and I didn't really see Jerry on Saturday night. And we met up on Monday, and we started talking about what it was like, and we're like, this needs to be a podcast. We need to make this a regular thing. So if you guys have any questions about training, hit us up. All right. You can reach me at estella@fieldcraftsurvival.com. If you want to set up private training, we're doing that now too. I'm getting hit up all the time about, you know, coming out to North Carolina and either doing like a one or two on one. We don't do one on ones, but a 2-on-1 training, or, you know, whether it's rifle, pistol, shotgun, like we'll set that up for you. And it'll be like a 6-hour block of instruction. You'll get a lot of info. But we want to make this a regular thing. And, you know, we love training. We're training junkies. So why don't you guys come and train with us? Guarantee you're going to have a good time, and you're going to learn something, and you're going to hopefully get bitten by the bug. Just not one of those black widows. Not literally bitten by a black widow. We don't want you to lose your freaking thumb. So any final words?
No, I'm good.
I know, dude. That went fast. Yes, that was like 56 minutes talking about training, and I'm going to go throw this bayonet into the tree because that's what idiots do. So guys, come out and train with us. Check us out on the web, www.fieldcraftsurvival.com. Look up the training in Aberdeen. Look up all the training that Casey Hildreth, who has the finest hair at Fieldcraft Survival. Like, I'm jealous of his hair.
You.
Yeah, I know. So, all right, guys, we're going to get the hell out of here. Thanks so much for listening. This has been the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast.